This conference will now be recorded.
I will call the June 17th meeting 2020 of the Cambria Community Healthcare District Board of Directors in session. And we will forego the Pledge of Allegiance because we're teleconferencing. And we have established a quorum with Cecilia Montavo being here, Laurie Millier, Barbara Bronson Gray, Bill Rice, with President and Board Member Iggy Fedoroff being excused for the meeting. Next item on the agenda is any public for items that are not on the agenda. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak at this point?
Bill, possibly Vince from County MS wanted to say, address the board, and I didn't. It was a last minute thing. I didn't know where else to put in the agenda except maybe public comment. Or he could make a comment under when I give my report. Your choice.
Vince, what's your timing?
I'm fine until 3 o'clock, and then I've got another meeting at 3.
Okay, let's hold off. Let's hold off then until the administrator's report. We're gonna do the agenda a little bit different this month. We have a window of opportunity at 1:30 for our outside auditor, Leslie Ward, to present the 2018-2019 audit report. So my intent is to go through the agenda as published, but when we get to 1:30 and Leslie joins us, we'll stop at that point and move to the audit report item on the agenda, handle that, and then go back and pick up where we left off. So the next item is the consent agenda, the minutes for the meeting of May 15th, the special meeting. Are there any changes to that? And the approval of the minutes for the May 20th regular meeting. Are there any changes to those?
Bill, I would move approval of the minutes of both the May 15th and the May 20th meetings as provided in the packet.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, Laurie seconded. And Simone, if you would do a roll call vote.
Okay. Bill Rice?
Yes.
Laurie Millier?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray?
Yes.
Celia Montalvo?
Yes.
4-0, approved.
Okay. Good. Let's move on then to item D. The first, the operations report. Is Tim with us?
Tim is not here at the moment. He's on his way. He may have been delayed somewhat, so we could skip and come back to that if you'd like.
Okay, let's do.
Go ahead.
Let's do that then, and go to number two, the administrator's report, and maybe this is a good time for Vince to have an opportunity to address us, and then we can release Vince and then go on with the regular administrator's report.
Sounds good, Vince. You want to go ahead?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you to the board for allowing me the opportunity to address you guys. First, most of you know me. My name is Vince Parucci. My daily position is I'm the county EMS director. However, today I'm here as the operations section chief for the COVID incident for the county. So I wanted to take time, like I said, and chat with you guys a little bit and express, you know, our sincere apologies and sharing your frustration with the test results that happened, particularly on June 2nd in Cambria. As many of you know, the county, we entered into a no cost contract. So I want to make sure that's clear, is that we did not pay any taxpayer dollar, that we entered into a contract with a third party vendor to facilitate the testing process. We provided the people, including some personnel from Cambria Healthcare District, to collect the specimens, but then this third-party vendor was going to gather the specimens with their equipment, their testing equipment, and then also contract with a lab to make that happen. Unfortunately, it didn't really run as smoothly as we wanted it to run, obviously. The vendor was has done this down in Southern California, and so we felt they were a trusted vendor, but they were working with boutique labs, what they describe as boutique labs. So they were not working with the traditional labs like Quest or Westpac or some of the other larger labs. And so what ultimately happened was the lab specimens that were collected on the second, so it was actually the second and the third, which is where we've had the major hiccup. They were sent to a lab out of state, and that lab has every day promised us, you know, you'll get the report the next day. So to rectify that, because that's very frustrating from a resident's perspective and from our perspective of public health, that we cannot get these results and we can't, you know, we just don't know if there's disease spread or not. So to rectify that, we're doing a couple of things. One, we're looking to bring all the testing in-house. We were already supplying the personnel and we started supplying the testing equipment. So now we're going to be able to run the testing equipment and or the testing process in our lab. Our lab just added a new product to their Panther system, their testing system, which will now allow them to do up to 300 tests a day. So that should address our testing shortfall. Also rectify what we're doing is we're going to come back on the 24th and 25th in your community to also do testing again. We're going to be at the Vets Hall. I'm sorry, what? We're going to do testing on June 25th. And
I'm having trouble. I don't know if I'm the only one.
Yeah. I'm hearing something in
me
the
as
background.
Well.
Mike, are you there?
Mike?
Yeah, here. I'm hearing kind of background.
It's probably me, Tim. I just signed in.
Oh,
hello?
Okay.
Oh.
It stopped. You're good. That fixed it.
It
That's
was
fine.
Probably
go ahead.
No, I'm okay. Sorry. I just want to let you guys know I signed in.
Okay.
Okay.
But mute your phone if you're not talking though.
Okay.
Okay, Vince, back to you.
All right. So anyway, we'll be back. Like I said, we're going to be back in the community on the 24th and the 25th at the Vets Hall from 9 to 4. And we have already been working with another lab. So as we're spinning up our own lab capacity, we've also entered into an agreement with UCSF in San Francisco as part of a program, and we've been using them to also test our specimens. So your specimens will be collected and resulted in a timely manner. You know, now that we've got the process down and we're doing it here locally or with UCSF, either way, we're going to get your results as they should be within a couple of days. We've also dealt with the sign-up sheet. One of the issues that we noticed or that we found with the vendor that we were using was, one, they were wanting insurance information, which they can bill the insurance company, but we also know it's cumbersome and onerous for many folks. So we have dealt with that by creating our own new registration sheet. However, you can still go to ReadySlow and sign up like you did previously for the previous test. So there'll be no issues there. It'll just be a brand new sheet or a brand new electronic version to sign up. That'll make it much more simplistic and easier for the user and also be able to collect the information. One of the other things that we've added is we've added the ability to text or phone call or call results out. So when the individual signs up for the test, they'll be able to, if they're interested in receiving a text, they can click that they're willing to receive a text, or they'll receive a phone call from public health. So they will, you know, we've tried to address that as well. Again, I sincerely apologize you know, I've worked with the board on several different issues, and as the operations section chief, I was definitely very frustrated when I was hearing the reports of what was going on in Cambria and the results or the lack thereof. And so I just wanted to take a minute and, you know, have a chance to speak to the board, share my sincere apologies, and get an update on where we're at, where we're going, and be able to answer any questions that you folks might have.
Hi, Vince. This is Barbara. Thank you so much for taking the trouble and for your update. How will the people who took the test, June 2nd and 3rd, and did not hear back, how will they hear about the details of the operation as you just described it and how to access it on those days? Will they get re-notified or in some way communicated with?
Yes. So an email was actually sent out about 12:30, I believe. I was sitting right there when it happened, when our MedHealth branch director sent it out. So she sent out an email to everyone, well, to, I believe, 260 email addresses. And these were the folks that we had email addresses from of the previous group. There's still a potential shortfall of maybe 50 to 75 that we don't have email addresses for. We're still, you know, we're still trying to figure out how to let those folks know.
Would it be helpful to you if we ask Mike, for example, to post on the Cambria-related social media an update on this? Would that be a benefit?
Yeah, absolutely. Anything we can do to spread the word and, you know, encourage the folks if they, you know, are interested and would like to be, you know, essentially retested, but tested. We're definitely willing to do what we can to help that. Absolutely.
Vince, if you want to send me that email, I can use that to, you know, do that process.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
Vince, this is Lori Malour. I have a question for those who did receive test results. How confident are you in the that they're reliable, given the experience with this lab?
I'm confident. You know, I mean, we have had issues. It's hard to say 100% confidence, to be completely honest and transparent. I'm as confident as I could be in any of the testing right now, other than really what I'm seeing done in our own public health lab, and I'm probably just being very partial. But I mean, I'm confident in the results. But I also will remind anyone and everyone that when you have that test done, even if it comes back as a negative, it's a snapshot in time. So, you know, I think that's one thing that really needs to be communicated to everyone is that, you know, when you were tested at, you know, a week ago, that means a week ago you did not have, you know, COVID, but that doesn't mean that, you know, within the last week you haven't been exposed to it or began to develop, the virus itself and begin to shed the virus. So, I'm as confident as I can be with the results, but again, I remind everybody that they are just a snapshot in time.
So, Vince, it sounds like you're what you're saying is consistent with the what I've heard, which is that you're more likely to have a false negative than you are a false positive?
That's a good question. I don't have the technical answer for that one, Barbara, so I don't want to give you guys any misleading information.
Vince, this is Cecilia Montalvo. First, I just have to thank you for, I don't know you, but I can imagine you've worked very, very hard over the last few months, and I know as a county resident, you know, hopefully you realize how much I think our citizens appreciate that work. And thank you for being here today. I regrettably was one of those people who was tested on that day. I've heard absolutely nothing. Interestingly, I just got an email indicating that not only that, but the records that the county does have don't show that I was ever registered, even though I was pre-registered. Was one of the very first people to register. So, there's really nothing that we can do now, to make that right. I think my main concern is about the communication to people to give them confidence going forward that Yeah, because it's, you know, it's an uncomfortable test, right? Most of the people didn't have symptoms and probably didn't have it. But, you know, if they really want to be tested and they go back, that that this wouldn't happen again. And it sounds like you've taken all the steps to do that. But, boy, I mean, to now realize, as I do, that you don't even have the full list is really a shame. But I thank you for being here today and for all your work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I apologize. You know, unfortunately, there's just a lot of moving parts. And, you know, I think that's always the fear, is that people are going to fall through the proverbial crack. And I completely apologize.
Not needed.
Vince, I will say that the staff at the county level has been very helpful with me through this debacle. I've been fielding a lot of complaints and issues and answering questions, but the county health and the county staff has been very receptive, very helpful. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Our team, you know, it's I'm the operations section chief, but I'm not the one taking, you know, I'm not the one that's doing the meat and potatoes of this. It's Liz Merson, Cindy Treckler, Christine Gager. I mean, those three ladies and their teams have been amazing, and I echo your sentiment there for sure.
Yeah, Cindy's the one I've been in most contact with. She's really great.
Yeah, and she's not even a public health employee. She's from public works.
Well, yeah, she's doing a tremendous job. Very, very responsive.
Thank you.
Vince, thank you for your time and your comments. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. If there's no other comments, then I'll sign off. But again, thank you, everyone in Cambria. I know you guys are all committed to providing a healthy community, and we're here working with you as well. So, yeah, thank you, guys. I appreciate everything.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vince.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bill, Tim's on. Do you want to jump back to his report before mine?
Yeah, why don't we drop back to operations report. Tim, you're on.
Okay, I don't have my report.
I wanted to mention my email last week, I think it was Friday, I'd asked the board members to review your report and my report because we have such a large agenda. I wanted to keep our, instead of reading our reports like we usually do or going through them in minutia, if anybody has any questions, I wanted to make our reports somewhat brief. Go ahead. That being said.
That being said, is there any questions on my report that I can answer? Lou?
Tim, Lou? How are we doing in June, kind of year to date? Give me an estimate or a guesstimate of how we're doing in terms of number of transports.
For the month of June right now, I believe we're at around 25 to 30. So we're starting to go back to where we were pre-COVID March. We're actually seeing an increase in calls.
That's good news.
Yeah, it's very good news. Yes. And we've had more, we're actually increasing also with Monterey County calls. In the last 2 months, we've actually gone up there, I think a total of 5, maybe 6 times in the last several months. So the Monterey County calls are increasing, and our transports for the Cambria community is also transporting. People are realizing that they can go to the hospital and not get COVID, and now they're starting to call and get transported like they were prior to the start of the pandemic.
Thank you, Tim. Are there any other questions about the operations report for Tim? If not, we're going to take that break that I talked about at the beginning of the meeting. Leslie Ward has joined us, and I'd like to introduce Leslie. Leslie is Director of Assurance Services for our outside independent auditing firm, Clifton Larson and Allen. And Leslie, to kind of set the stage for you, we have sent out the PDF versions of the three documents to each of the board members. They have them. And why don't I turn it over to you at this point, and you can kind of just walk us through the documents in the order that you would like to and provide any comments to us.
All righty. Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to share your audit report with you. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the actual audit report and financial statements, and then I will also talk about the required communications letter and just briefly talk about the internal control letter. So just to kind of introduce myself, as Bill said, I'm the director for your engagement. This was actually our third year for the audit. And we started the audit kind of back in November, and there was a bit of a delay with some different issues, which I will touch upon when I go through our required communications. I'm going to start with the audit report. So the audit report, because the purpose of our audit is to give an opinion on your financial statements. And based on the results of our audit, we did issue an unmodified opinion, and that is the best opinion that we can give. We believe that based on our procedures, that the financial statements are fairly presented, that they are in accordance with US GAAP, and that they are free of material misstatement. The financial document is really broken up into a couple of different sections. We start with the audit opinion, which I just talked about, and that's followed by the management discussion and analysis. Do you want me to let you get that document open? Would that be helpful?
On my screen.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and.
No, that's not it, Mike. It's in the audit report, and it starts on page 4.
That one. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I just
it's
had report, that up on the screen.
Go ahead, Leslie, with your comments.
I'll keep going. So the opinion is followed by the management discussion and analysis, and that is really management's opportunity to talk about the activities of the district for the year. The management discussion and analysis is not covered under our audit opinion, but we do look at it, we read it, make sure that it doesn't contradict anything that appears in your audited financial statements, but it really is management's opportunity to kind of tell the story of what's been going on, and also to talk about any forward-looking information which might affect the district in the future. So we kind of put together a sort of a shell document, then we give it to management, and management creates a narrative, and then we incorporate it into the document. The management discussion and analysis is followed by the three basic financial statements, the first of which is your statement of net position. And that is a position, it's a point in time. It tells you where the district stood financially as of June 30th, 2019. And it's your assets, your liabilities, and your resulting net position. And normally this would be document that we would probably spend the most time looking at or talking about. But I want to move on from this because I think it's important to note your assets are sitting at about a little under $800,000. And then the deferred outflows, which is related to your pension, is about $400,000. And then your current liabilities, along with the long-term liabilities that you're actually going to pay out, are right around $100,000. And I point this out to you because you have a really large going forward net deficit. And I point this out to you because what's really driving that deficit is the recording of the OPEB liability and the net pension liability. And I know the district's been working really hard to correct your financial situation. You had a going concern opinion last year, and management and engaged in some different plans and activities to reduce your operating expenses. And so I think I want to give you credit and have you look more closely to the cash flow statement this time rather than the statement of net position. But having said that, the statement of net position really is it's your assets plus your liabilities and then showing you the resulting net position. The second statement is your statement of revenues, expenses, and your change in net position. And this shows you your activity from your operations, your revenue coming in, the operating loss, which is then offset by your non-operating revenue, which is mostly the property tax and special assessments. And again, I want to point out that this year, your change in net position was a loss of $124,000, but that's comparing to last year, where it was a loss of $650,000. So I think I want to point that out, and so that the district takes credit for the measures that were put into place to try to correct that net deficit position. And you definitely see the results of that in your net operating activities for this year. And then the third statement is your statement of cash flows. And this is your liquidity statement. And this is, again, very important, because you can see that for the first time, I think, in probably several years, the cash flow is actually positive. So, you know, you had cash used by operations, which is offset by your tax assessment money. And then you actually had an increase in cash. So I like to compliment the management and the board, because I know that was very challenging, particularly over the last couple of years. So this is an important statement for you to look at and really kind of celebrate the fact that you have really been instrumental in turning the district around. Following your financial statements is the footnotes. The footnotes are all required disclosures. They are intended to enhance your understanding of the financial statements. And they talk about your policies, procedures, your cash position. There are some very lengthy footnotes related to the net pension liability and to the OPEB liability. I think I don't think there's anything really new in here this year. Are you guys getting feedback? Is that me?
I think we're doing okay. We can still hear you, Leslie, fine.
Okay. I don't think there's anything particularly new or unusual this year. There is a subsequent event footnote this year that talks about the effects of the COVID-19, the potential effects. Because the audit was delayed, by the time we actually are issuing the audit, we all know about the COVID, the impact it's had on our state and on our communities. So management elected to disclose that fact as a subsequent event. It's not quantifiable. You don't really know what the complete results are going to be, but it's really just letting your readers and your users know that management thought about it and is anticipating that there may be effects from this and has done what they can do to mitigate those effects. Then following the footnotes, I'll just kind of fast forward through these again. They should look familiar to you. There was really nothing new this year, no new standards that would have caused additional or major changes in the disclosures. The footnotes are followed by the required supplementary information. And these are the very detailed tables that are required by the government accounting standards to talk about your OPEB liability and your pension liability. And these are similar to the MD&A. These are not actually covered under our audit opinion. We use the information provided by your actuaries. We assist management in developing the tables, but we really don't give an opinion on them. We just make sure that the numbers agree with what has been reported in financial statements. But as far as the disclosures, they are actually not considered under our audit opinion. And then the last aspect of the audit report is our report on internal control. And our audit standards require that we look at your systems of internal control. We don't audit them, but we look at them, because management is required to establish a set of internal controls that would reasonably detect errors, fraud, or omission. And this year, we actually had two findings that we consider to be material weaknesses. And I just want to spend a minute talking about those. The first, this is on page 39 of the document. The first is what we discovered was that there was not a system or process for a monthly close and reconciliations that was systemic and done on a routine basis and reviewed and approved. Now, I want to point out that this was an issue that came up when we did our initial audit back in 2018-17. And And then management did develop some of these systems of internal control, and there was no finding last year because they were in place and were being worked upon. And then unfortunately, because you had such a dramatic change in your management, your accounting, your accountant, outside accountant, and then your internal accountant, and you had this complete turnover, so that by the time we actually started the audit, there was really no one still with the district who had that history with the district and really knew what some of these systems were supposed to be. So we did have this finding. We brought it forward to management and actually spoke with Bill about it. And management has come up with a plan to mitigate this and to put in place systems that will indeed require those types of reconciliations and attention to the monthly activity that will result in catching errors, making sure journal entries are posted properly. Also, I spoke with Bill and with Mike, and I understand that your accounting firm who came in to help you out is going to stay with you for a while, at least for the moment, to help you keep these things going and get those reconciliations done and so forth. So that was the first finding. And then the second one related to the accounts receivable. And the problem with the accounts receivable was that it didn't actually agree to the general ledger, because the way the bad debt was being recorded, it was actually like doubling up on the bad debt, was understating the receivables. Again, we've spoken with management, and there's a plan in place now to analyze this. I don't know if it's going to be done quarterly or monthly, but there is a plan in place to manage those accounts receivable. I understand that you've brought the billing process in-house, which will also give management control over the much closer control over the billing activity and making sure that your receivables are properly stated. Just a caveat, the response from management, again, is not audited. It's basically management weighing in and saying, yes, you talked to us about this, and here's our intention and here's our plan. So that is pretty much the audit report. I'm going to just spend a few minutes talking about our required communications letter. That would be the next letter. That would be the other letter. As part of our, that's it. Again, part of our audit, our audit standards require that we have a conversation with governance and communicate certain information to you regarding the process of the audit. So we, as I said, we have audited the financial statements, we did issue our report, and we have an unmodified opinion. I always want to point out and remind the boards that management is responsible for the financial statements. We do prepare the financial statements. We work with management, and then we ask management to take responsibility for those. And we do request a representation letter wherein management does accept responsibility for the financial statements. I just want to always remind our boards that does reside with management. Management is also required to come up with appropriate accounting policies and procedures that are supported by authoritative literature and guidance. And we do not find anything that the district is doing that is outside those requirements. The district is reporting under US GAAP and on a full accrual basis, which is in accordance with accounting standards. As I mentioned earlier, there are no new accounting policies that were adopted that really change the way the district is doing, is recording their activity. Accounting estimates, because the district is a full accrual entity, there are always estimates, and those estimates can by definition be different from actual. I just want to point out those estimates that we consider to be particularly sensitive. The district has capital assets and has to make a determination of what the useful life is on those assets. So there's an inherent, if the value of the assets, management believes it's presented at fair and recoverable value, but it could be different. The estimate of allowance for doubtful accounts, I think I kind of touched on that with the finding. It's tricky to guess. The type of receivables the district records are just inherently kind of risky. So management does determine based on history and knowledge of the billing and the insurers how to what the bad debt allowance should be so that the receivables are recorded at a fair value, net realizable value. And then the final estimate is the pension and OPEB liabilities. And those are those staggeringly large liabilities that you see on your books. Those are really driven by actuarial valuations. We take that information. We are not actuaries. We rely on the work of the actuaries. And we take that information. We look at it. We go through it. We make sure it makes sense to us in terms of how it translates into the accounting activity. But we really do rely on the work of the actuaries. Let's see, what else? Statement disclosures, we kind of talked about those. Again, nothing new this year, neutral, consistent. We had no difficulties in performing the audit once we got started. We had a great delay because kind of the perfect storm that you suffered with everyone, just a lot of people leaving and that loss of that management, the history. So it did really delay the audit. But once we got going, we had no problems. We had great responses from your management team and from your accountant, your outside accountant. So once we got going, it went well. There was one uncorrected misstatement. There was a missed accrual of $4,300. It's not material, so we suggested that management just not record that, not worry about recording it, and so management did not. The corrected misstatements are attached at the end. There were several journal entries, and that relates to that first finding where there were a lot of errors detected as a result of our procedures. And what we learned is not a particular risk of fraud, but just a lack of the reconciliations and the, you know, making sure the monthly closes were being done. And that really is what's generating most of those entries. In addition, in discussions with your outside accounting firm, we also found out that the books and records, the QuickBooks had actually not been closed, had not been hard closed since 2005. So there were entries that were kind of not ever, your net position was kind of this moving target. So that's been taken care of, it's been remedied, and I don't think that that's gonna be a problem in the future. What else can I talk to you about? There are no disagreements with management. Management was extremely helpful. Mike, Simone, both very helpful, very, very responsive to our requests. And I've already talked to you about the findings that we had and the other information, that RSI information. And so the last item I'm going to talk about very briefly is the internal control letter. This letter is created really for the benefit of management. We identify anything that we consider to be a material weakness or a significant deficiency. We identify that and it goes into your audit report as a finding and it's brought to the attention of governance. And then we find other items that you see in this letter that really, they don't rise to the level of significant deficiencies or material weaknesses, but they're elements that we discovered in our audit that we want to bring forward to management. And since we're bringing it forward to management, we also, it's not a requirement, but as a courtesy, we bring this forward to the board and basically report this to both of you at the same time. So that's what this letter is. This really speaks primarily to the material weakness identified. The first one that talks about the lack of reconciliation and closing processes. Most of these items relate to that. You know, that not reconciling with fixed assets, not approving the bank reconciliations. Again, nothing on its own that rises to that level of significant deficiency, but in total, we wanted to report those to management and have a conversation. Management has fully responded to all of these items and has come up with a plan, which we will evaluate as we go into our audit for 2020. I want to also point out, I recognize it is now June 17th, and the opportunity to implement some of these changes is not a very long period of time. So when we come back to do the audit, the 2020 audit, which I think Mike, we talked a little bit maybe about October-ish this year, we will certainly look at what's happening now and give you credit for that. And if those things have been implemented, then we will remove the finding from your audit report. So that is kind of what I wanted to talk about. Are there any questions for me?
Leslie, first of all, on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you for the effort that you put in. You are correct in that you said it was a somewhat challenging and difficult audit this year because of the turnover in personnel. And we did have some starts and stops. But once we got everybody on board and headed in the same direction, and we were able to identify the Sherrington Financial folks that came in, and as you correctly said, discovered that the QuickBooks, our basic accounting system, had not been updated for many, many years. But our intent is to keep them with us, and hopefully when you do come back in October, you will not encounter the same issues and the same delays as you've had in the past. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I am confident that we will not. I am confident.
And at this time, I'd like to throw it open to any of the other board members that may have a question. Not hearing any, Leslie, again, on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you for the work that you and your firm did, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, and I hope you all have a nice afternoon, and it really was a pleasure working with you once we finally got it going. So thank you so much, and enjoy your afternoon. I'm going to go ahead and
thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. While we're on this item, the item one in the regular business, now that you've had an opportunity to hear Leslie and see the audit reports and the management letter, before we leave this and go back to the operations reports, are there any questions or concerns from the board that I may answer? Not hearing any. Let's go back to item D1, the ops report, which I think we're actually finished. There were no questions. Let's go on to the administrative report, item D2.
Thank you, Bill. And again, in the interest of time, because I know we have a very full agenda, I believe that this updated report is accurate. Is there any questions about any of the pieces of it? There's some good news in there. Does anyone have any questions? And don't forget, you have to unmute if you're muted.
I have a little question. I know you had a really busy month or months or however long it's been with all these other things like COVID to deal with. But I was wondering, we had talked about some policy reviews, maybe bit by bit, dripping them into the agenda so we can progress to get to a point where we might be able to look for insurance and other things that are related to updated policies. Is that on the agenda for you still? Are you looking to bring those to us bit by bit?
Yes, I had a conversation with our board president Iggy just middle of last week sometime about that, and I've been pushing to try to get that accomplished. But like you said, there's been a lot of moving parts going on right now. Our new payroll system, new billing system, well, et cetera. You know the picture. There's a lot going on. And so he kind of asked me, he said, how about we put this off till, say, the July or August board meeting? Would that give you time to do it? And actually, I agreed because I could rush and get it done now, but I would like to not rush and do it right the first time. So that's
well, July and August are next month and the month after, so that sounds pretty good.
Right. Well, probably August, September. I forgot July's next month. I'm a month behind. See, that's what I'm already messed up. So we're looking at probably September, the new year, the new fiscal year. We'll make that. It was understood that it was one of my operational or one of my administrative goals, and he felt that it would be best to put it on next year's list of goals that he and I are going to work on pretty soon. So that was the only remaining item on that list, and we both mutually agreed that it would be best for efficiency and my stress load to move that to the new year list, and then I will do it much more efficiently. So thanks for that. I'm glad you brought it up because I forgot to mention that, and Diggy did want me to bring that up, that he was in agreement with that movement.
Great, thank you. And when you refer to fiscal year, I think you're referring to your personal hiring year. Is that right? Like,
yeah,
fiscal
exactly.
Year is,
it starts in first part of first of September and of August. But yes, you're correct. I meant my annual year.
thank you.
My year. Too many years. yeah, and we, like I said, there's a lot of detail in here, a lot of good news. Things are going, overall, I would say things are going well in spite of COVID and other things. But, you know, as you can see in the, just a quick note in the financial reports, our call volume did go down in May as we thought it might. It only went down 12%, which was less than I thought it would. So that's sort of good news. And like Tim said, we're already seeing an increase. So maybe that dip was not as big and it's fleeting, so we'll see how that goes. Is there any questions about any of these, you know, 50,000 items on my list?
hearing,
you know, you see a lot of grants. We should be hearing from the grants. Go ahead.
Do you want to finish your comment about the grant before we move on?
Yeah, just that the grants, you know, you can see we've submitted for multiple grants, and my understanding is we're supposed to hear by the end of June. Things are, except for firehouse slabs, they're supposed to award the grant in July. So we should hear all these in the next few weeks. And I'll keep you posted on that. That's pretty exciting.
It is, and hearing no other questions from the board, let's move on to committee reports. The president is not here. Item 3B, property and facilities, Barbara.
This is quick. We are going to be talking about the ambulance options soon. And the only other thing that is happening with the property and facilities committee that's somewhat notable is that we will be talking to the geologist and the engineering report person soon to update the entire committee on what the facts were at that time and see if we can develop a plan to present to the board for any remediation that needs to be done to the slope.
Thank you. Next committee report is healthcare advocacy and outreach. Cecilia?
Thank you. The committee itself has not formally met. Its members has continued in the form of our community leadership group related to the COVID-19. I anticipate that next month we will actually try and bring a formal meeting together so that we can use that committee for other work beyond COVID-19. But we are scheduled to have another COVID-19 call next week. If it had gone to a slower schedule, I suspect at that meeting there may be some additional discussion just about what's being seen across the country in terms of the increased cases. And actually, to be honest, in San Luis Obispo County, somewhat of an uptick. So we'll look forward to that, but the committee itself does not have a formal meeting to report from, but will soon.
Thank you. Next up is finance. The finance committee did meet since the last meeting, and we met to put together the operating budget for the next fiscal year, which we will be presenting formally in another item later in the meeting. The finance folks also worked closely with the outside auditors to wrap up the year-end audit and the audited financials, reviewing, proofreading, etc., and getting everything set up. So we now have that behind us, and We'll wait until October when it starts all over again. Next is grants. Lori?
Bill, I have a quick question for you. I'm sorry. Sure. First, I wanted to thank you, just board member to board members, just how much I appreciate the time you put in on the audit and all your work on finance this year, because it's clear it made a big difference, and I just wanted to say thank you personally. I noticed on page 38, which is the check detail, that we have a list of checks, expenses in there that don't have any description whatsoever, and wanted to see if in the future we could fix that, because I'm used to seeing some kind of description associated with those kinds of payments, and unless I'm looking at it wrong, I think that is how we've done it in the past.
Good point, Barbara. Mike,
we have an answer.
Tell us.
Yes, I'm glad. I meant to cover that in my administrator's finance thing, and I forgot. Simone's sitting right here with me. We have a good reason for that. Go ahead.
Well, there's a place to put that still in QuickBooks, in the new QuickBooks Online. I do enter it whenever I write a check. I put the account number, what it's for, the supplies or whatever. But it doesn't populate on the check or in here. Now, that's a glitch in the software program, and they're supposed to be fixing it. Molly has put in a support ticket, I believe, she told me. It's probably been a few weeks or probably about a month now. So she said they're not real fast in fixing support tickets, but they're aware of it, and they are working on fixing that. So hopefully you won't have to see it blank for very long anymore.
Okay. Do you have any information about the nature of these 8 or 9 checks?
Well, it's specifically, if you want to ask which one, because usually the description would be like an account number on PG&E, but if you want to know specifically about a check, you could ask.
Might it be possible to go back and fill in the basic information and provide that in our next packet as an in addition to the one for the year to come, the month to come? In other words, you might not know it now, but could you provide that in the next packet?
I think that makes sense, Barbara.
I would have to hand, for the past ones, like for this one, I would have to hand write it on there.
Right. So you could, if you had to, just in terms of our responsibility to the community and also to just good accounting, even if you just wrote it in on these pages and then put that into our next packet, we would at least have had a chance to be sure we understood.
Makes sense, Barbara. Why don't you put that on your list, Mike, for next meeting?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And you want us to go back to this month and not just moving forward, right? You want
refractive? I would. Yeah, I'd like to.
But if the same issue occurs next month, in next month's data, mm-hmm. Do the same thing by adding the missing information in.
Okay, and I'll follow up with Molly and troubleshoot that trouble ticket and see where we're at with that. They should be able to fix it before too long, even with the COVID and everybody working at home, those kind of things.
Yeah.
The QuickBooks support team should be able to address it, I would think.
Write checks, I have to hand write the account number on there before I mail it off.
Look into that.
Thank you. Okay, we're back to grants. Lori?
The grants committee has not formally met, although I think we will try and start meeting in July again. As far as the assistance to firefighter grants, the denial letters should be out by the end of June, and then the award letters, from what I understand, will come out in July. So the longer it takes for us to hear back, the more positive I'm thinking. It is also, there'll be a new round of funding available for 2020, which may open us up as early as August. So we're going to have to figure out how we'll go forward on that. And that's why I think we'll be meeting next month. But other than that, no news.
Thank you, Lori. And last item F, Strategic Planning, Cecilia?
The Strategic Planning Committee did meet. It was a session including all of our board members, less 80. And I think we've made very good progress on our strategic plan. We're going to have one more meeting. And I think folks know what we need to do to finalize. There's some individual assignments associated with that. So I think we'll meet again next month to finalize and bring it back.
Thank you, Cecilia. We'll now go into the regular business. Item one, we've already covered. Item two is the resolution for next year's CPI adjustment. Mike, that's you.
Actually, may I interrupt for a moment? Just want to describe some circumstances. I'm a little concerned. So I am moving out of my residence in the Bay, and I am driving while we're having this meeting. I'm very concerned that I'm going to go through an area without reception. I don't know, will the board have a quorum if I'm off for 10 minutes, or should I pull over?
The board will have a quorum because there's four of us, including you. So if we lose you, there'll still be three of the five, which is a quorum.
Okay.
And go ahead.
Lori? Well, I was going to ask.
Cecilia?
Ask if maybe we want to cover the primary care, just in case take it out of order, is what I guess I'm asking. Is that what you were going to say, Lori?
I was going to ask if we could partner up
Lori?
The survey. Yes. I was going to ask if we could partner up have the survey item follow the primary care one, just because they kind of go hand in glove. So have it move up or before the finance or the budget discussion.
Okay, why don't we do that then? And this way we can hopefully keep Cecilia with us. Unless the board has any problem, let's go down to item four, which is the primary care project, and that's Cecilia. So go ahead, Cecilia.
Thank you. So I think as you know, and we've reported on previously, we have been working, I think with a lot of encouragement from voices in the community to address the lack of primary care services in Cambria and San Simeon, particularly for traditional Medicare and commercial patients. We have, as reported previously, since Tenet has left the market, that we have been in some discussion with the only other regional health system in the area, which would be Dignity. And we have gotten a very positive response, and that work continues. I think this is a very difficult project. Primary care in California, nationally, wherever you look at it, generally does not cover its own costs in these health systems. And so there is a subsidy involved. And it closing the gap, what it might cost to have sustainable, reliable primary care that won't leave the community, it's something that we need to make sure that we have structured an arrangement that assures the community of that, if in fact the community wants to support that. So that's what we're looking to do. We are now acutely aware that the deadline for putting an initiative on the ballot, theoretically, I believe, was today. And as much as we hope that somehow we could finagle our way around it, I actually, the more I think about it, and we did have a meeting to look at the financial pro forma. We have a lot of work to do on that pro forma. We have a negotiation to do with Dignity if they're our partner. I just don't see a way of getting it on a August ballot. And that's very sad to me. It is possible that we could ask if Dignity would fund the special election. And so I'm still going to hold out the hope that that might be a contribution that they might make and that the work continue. One of the key elements, we'll get to the, well, let me just speak to the numbers. The first pass shows a deficit, and this is very low levels of productivity. If that position only had a 25% share of the Cambria Simsimium market, without looking at expenses, it might cost as much as $300,000 a year to fund that clinic. I think we can do better than that, particularly with urgent care, and we will continue to work on the numbers. And I expect in the end that number, the subsidy required, will come way down. But the other thing we need to know is that this work has the support of the community. And I think Barbara and Lori and I and Mike, we have all felt very strongly about this. And so Lori has, and I may turn this to her, unless somebody has any questions on the first part, because Lori has constructed a survey for that purpose and has a draft of that, that we could get results back by the end of July and really give us a better indication of where the community stands on this and their likelihood of supporting a tax initiative for it. And so I don't know if we should take questions, or Lori, do you want to speak to the survey, or how should we proceed?
Well, why don't we if we could separate them and kind of close out the primary care project.
Sure.
Okay, it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Cecilia, that there's you've done a lot of work, a lot of great work. There's unfortunately a lot more work to be done, and the timing is working against us. But you know, we're just going to have to deal with that and figure out how best to put this together. And once we get there, and we have commitments from all parties in writing, that we can then make decisions about what the next steps would be. But thank you for all the work that you've done.
Thank you. I think that summarizes it. I don't know, Barbara, if you have anything to add. Barbara has spent a lot of time on this.
Just that I keep hoping that we could somehow have the June miracle and be able to whip everything together in time. But sometimes I think these sorts of delays in the public process will end up benefiting us in some unknown way. And so I agree with you. And I think that we will end up being successful in the long run.
Okay, with that finished, Lori, we can go down to you to the community healthcare needs survey. Go ahead.
Okay, so this survey really, a draft is attached, and it is designed for us to reassess where the community stands as far as where they're receiving their primary care, and whether or not they're utilizing urgent care, and what their thoughts are as far as the need for local services here in Cambria, and whether or not, as Cecilia said, they'd be willing to support a tax initiative to support to offset the cost of primary care. The deadline, you know, that we were working under isn't quite as imperative at the moment, but I would suggest that we get it out sooner than later and really get a sense of what the community is feeling and let them know that we are working towards solving this problem. And I hope that's not me doing. Can you hear?
Yes,
we can hear.
Oh, sorry, I'm going to mute.
Oh, okay. So what, if there are any questions about the surveys or any suggestions for change, that would be appreciated. But I would like to move that we go ahead and move forward on this project and get board approval for the funding, which will be under $3,000 to mail out surveys to every residential address within the district boundaries.
So, Lori, are you going to make a motion to fund the survey?
Sure. I may not say this correctly, but I move to approve funding of the survey for the proposed survey.
I would second that.
Second.
Okay,
to recommend some changes to it, a couple of tweaks to it, so it's before a vote.
Okay, go ahead, Barbara.
Okay.
And I really think it's a great survey. In talking to Dignity yesterday, I realized that there's some question about what health plans we bring to the table from our community. And I was wondering if we might add a question, if people are willing to tell us what their health plan is, and we could put out a few and then have a fill-in as well.
Okay.
The other question to consider, I'm not sure how to word it or whether we should, but perhaps up towards the end or somewhere, we could ask if additional funding were needed to support such a clinic in Cambria. Do you have any thoughts about whether you might, depending on the cost, might you be in favor or against it and why? And or some kind of a question, that's rather rough now, but to just get a sense of people's commitment and interest to this.
Well, the last question does try to capture that, but we can reword it.
We might want to fiddle with it. It's just a thought. So,
okay.
And Lori, would you take an amendment to your motion to say that the survey would cost approximately $3,000?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Yes.
And Lori, one other comment I wanted to make was that I do think getting the survey out soon would have benefits because we have so many people who are frustrated that with the perception that we are idle on this issue, and they would not only be interested in responding to it, but I think it would be good for the community to see that we're on it now. But that's only if the cash flow is such that we can do it.
Okay. Well, we have a motion on the floor that has been seconded. And if there's no more discussion, I'd like to call a vote. Simone, if you would do a roll call.
Okay. Bill Wright.
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray.
Yes.
Lori Millier.
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo.
Yes.
Approved 4-0.
All right, let's go back and try to get back on schedule here. Let's go back up to item 2, the resolution for the next year's CPI adjustment. Mike.
Okay, I was scrolling back up on the screen. Okay, yes, this is a resolution that is done every year. The board members are probably familiar, more so than I, because I just read up about this about a week ago. Now I'm familiar. It has to do with our special assessment tax that, in a nutshell, it's adjusted annually for the cost of living, CPI. And we use the Greater Los Angeles CPI as our benchmark. It typically runs somewhere around 3% each year. And under the law, it is allowed that the board can adjust this special tax assessment by the CPI. This year, I did the research and I put together the attached resolution for you. This year, we're sitting at 0.9% is the adjustment in the tax, an increase of 0.9%. And that's what the resolution will reflect. And if approved, I will have a copy for signatures here at the office. We'll have to get Iggy and Barbara to sign it at the bottom. And that will put, and then I send it, I have to have a copy of that to the county by before the end of this month, prior to July 1st, I should say.
Okay. Do I hear any a motion to accept this resolution?
I would move to accept the resolution.
OK, Do I hear a second?
Second.
I'll second. Lori has it.
Okay, the resolution has been proposed and a seconded. If there's no further discussion, Simone, would you do a roll call?
Yes. Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray?
Yes.
Lori Melior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo?
Yes.
Approved 4-0.
The next item is the CAL FIRE ambulance procurement proposal. And I'm trying in my mind to think, does it make more sense to do number 5, the budget for the year, and then start the discussion about CAL FIRE? Does anyone have any objection if we do the fiscal year budget first to kind of set the stage?
Bill, this is Cecilia. Again, I still anticipate losing reception. I'm now stuck in traffic, so it's taking longer for me to lose reception. But I think you may find with Barbara's remarks and recommendation to the board, since we're not asking, we're actually asking for some further study, I believe, that, and I would like to participate in the CAL FIRE one if I can. Barbara, I don't know if you agree, but I'm not sure we need the budgetary context for the recommendation you're making. Is that correct?
Not for the recommendation that we're making, but if Bill thinks that it would be good for us to go through that process first, it's okay with me.
Well, I think the greater good is to do something that Cecilia can stay with us, and if she's stop and go in traffic, then let's do the CAL FIRE ambulance number 3. Barbara, that's yours.
Thanks, Bill.
So we, as a committee, looked at this in great detail with thanks first to Mike and to Tim for their work and evaluation. And we got to the point where we saw some benefits on both sides. And we, as a committee, may have leaned in one direction, but we felt like it was important for you to hear the pros and cons, as we saw it, of the concept of either do a waiting period or buying the CAL FIRE 2005 ambulance or planning sometime during the year to buy a new ambulance. So I think it would be appropriate to ask Mike and Tim to take it from here, if you would.
Thank you, Barbara. Yes, a lot of discussion has gone on over the last, week or so. You're all aware, I don't want to beat a dead horse, you're aware that Tim's done a tremendous amount of work with this CAL FIRE ambulance consideration. Normally we wouldn't touch a used ambulance with a 10-foot pole, but this is an exception. And so that's why we even considered it. It is in excellent shape for a used ambulance, and it is a good value as far as the purchase price. Now, that's kind of the pluses the way I see this from my perspective. That being said, the thing that concerns me the most is we can budget the purchase of this through either some sort of short-term financing or whatever. However, what I don't see how we can budget is the unknown mechanical failure. Even though it's been well-maintained, we have excellent records on it, it's 15 years old. And if it crashes a engine or a transmission, we're looking at $5,000+. That's not in our budget. It's unpredictable. And that concerns me. Where a new ambulance, as we started to examine that option, would have a full warranty. And then it's much easier to budget on our annual budget because of the way our cash flow is and so forth. So I started to swing my opinion towards this other option, and that's why we changed the proposal to ask the board to consider the purchase of the CAL FIRE ambulance or a new ambulance. And Tim went back to the drawing board. He got the numbers, the figures, so that you can look at that. Obviously, the purchase price overall for a new ambulance is much higher, but it could be financed at a low interest and spread over a budgeted five-year plan. And it has the company that we've been getting the quotes from, we're very happy with. They've been very, that's where we got our last ambulance from. And the warranty is just outstanding. So that's in a nutshell why we kind of broadened this proposal to say, now hold on a minute, let's look at a new ambulance. The option of the CAL FIRE ambulance being a four-wheel drive is intriguing, but I think that potential for cost, unknown cost, is what makes me nervous about that. And if we really think we need a four-wheel drive ambulance, I would like to explore that later, possibly through grant funding and so forth. But for this proposal, our recommendation that we came up with, and this is after conversation with the Property and Finance Committee, is that we consider a new ambulance. If the board approves this today, we're not saying I'm going to run out tomorrow and purchase this new ambulance. We're strictly saying that you're directing us to come back to you, say, in a month's time with a hard quote and actually, you know, the deal, so that we can then make approval for the purchase. We just want a direction on if that's what you think in this coming fiscal year, we should purchase this new ambulance we're looking at for those.
My understanding is that what we're asking for from the board was a little different. I didn't think we were asking the board to direct the committee to go back and develop the detail on a new ambulance per se, but rather to go back and develop full analysis of the various options with the recommendation. So I don't think we're taking I think there's three, as you indicated. I think it's push this off is one option. CAL FIRE is another option, but we want to add this new purchase to the mix and then come back with a recommendation in a month. Barbara, was that your understanding as well?
Yes, but I thought if people had feedback at this point, based also on the summary of projected annual loan payments that Bill has furnished us, if there could be some broad discussion generally about initial feelings, I think that would be helpful to the committee as well.
Barbara, if I could chime in.
Please, don't. The acting chair does not need to ask me you could chime in.
And my comments are going to be directed towards the document that we sent out earlier today, the summary of projected annual loan payments. And I think it's always a good idea to look at the whole picture, that sometimes you make isolated, individual, separate decisions about acquisition of capital assets and equipment, and make a decision for that specific asset that makes sense, and you go forward and do it. But you really also need to look at it in conjunction with everything else that's going on. And that's what I attempted to do here with this summary of the projected annual loan payments. We still have a number of years of payments to be made on Unit 18. Okay. We've started payments in the current fiscal year on Unit 20. And assuming we were to use for discussion purposes the acquisition of a new versus a used ambulance, and the numbers that Tim was able to supply of, I think it was $145,000 acquisition cost, I included the payments over 5 years for that. And then when you put them all together by fiscal year, you start looking at numbers that are very large, that if you were to look for just the ambulance loan payments, let's say in 2021, it's a little over $76,000. And then in 2022, the annual financing costs are at the $84,000 level. also in that mix, and we can't forget, is there's a proposal to acquire four Zoll monitors. And they were the proposal, which has not yet been approved or presented. But if it was approved, you can see that on an annual basis, that's over a little over $25,000 for 12 monthly payments on that. So when you add that again to the loan payments, because at the end of the day, financing the Zoll monitors is another loan payment, we're, you know, close to $100,000 in some of the years out two or three from now. And I am not talking for or against any one thing, but what I want to do is make the board aware of that if you make decisions today to acquire capital assets, that we're mortgaging the future, and you need to know what those dollars look like that we're going to have to deal with in the future, because as those capital repayments accumulate, questions about doing certain capital improvements and things in years, let's say 2021, 22, 23, take on a different perspective, because at some point the well runs dry and you're spending all your capital dollars repaying loans. And I just wanted the board to take a look at these numbers and put it in perspective as we have these discussions.
So this is very useful. And I have a question for you, Bill. Yeah. As you look at this and as you understand the need to assiduously and regularly acquire new ambulances as they wear out and as we need them, how do you parse this? What does, given we know we're going to need a new ambulance in the next 12 to 15 months for sure, what does the total situation say to you that, just in global terms, that we should be thinking of?
A couple of items struck me, Barbara. First of all, Unit 18, we are obligated to make payments into 2023. Okay. So if we were to decide, and I'm dealing only with that unit, if we were to make a decision that that ambulance is at the end of its life today or next year, we still have an obligation to make payments on it. So if we were to take it out of service, let's say in year 2022, and dispose of it, we would in essence have a loss on that transaction because we still have outstanding loan payments. And I just wanted to make sure that people understand that before we make decisions about individual assets. Mm-hmm. But to get back to your question, you can see the proposed Unit 21, over 5 years at $145,000, that's going to cost us $159,744. Is the decision to spend $159,000 versus $45,000 for an ambulance that can fill the need of the new one? And if that's true, then you're really looking at, should I spend $45,000 or $159,000? And on the surface, that seems to be an easy decision. But as Mike pointed out, you're buying a used ambulance that's 10 or 15 years old. It doesn't have any warranty on it. And while it has low mileage, at some point, it's going to have repair issues.
In addition to that, the problem with that vehicle is that it, in some ways, it hasn't been used that much, and so there's some questions, of course, about how fit it really is. It has old safety features, and every time we take an ambulance into Atascadero or Paso or wherever it has to go to the hospital, it takes several crew members often to execute that, a great deal of time and significant dollars over time. So that's what we're looking at too, is that we jumped on it as a neat thing because it was out there for us, but as we talked about it, it seemed like the downsides may be significant.
A question I had, Barbara, and clearly you folks have done a lot of work in the Property and Facilities Committee looking at this. Isn't there a middle option here of a new ambulance of the type 2 that Unit 20 is? Seems to me Unit 20 was in the neighborhood of cost of a neighborhood of 92 or 93,000. I am sure there are benefits to the type 3 ambulance, but one of the questions I have is, whatever the benefits of the type 3 versus type 2, are they overwhelmingly enough to cause us to spend an additional $50,000+? Or do we need to understand that we're a small healthcare district and we have to live within our means, and maybe a $92,000 ambulance is a better fit than a $145,000? I don't know the answer to that question, but in my mind, it needs to be raised. And also in my mind, I need to understand why one is better for us versus the other.
Bill, I think we can address that because Tim and I have had long conversations about that because, as you stated, it makes sense from a financial standpoint to consider that. Reason we propose the type 3 mainly is, even though it is more costly, is the operational functionality. We are a small healthcare district, but we have a large area with long transport times. And we tend to have, when we do get patients, they're very sick people. So patient care-wise, if we have multiple patients in the back of the ambulance or we have a critical stroke or some patient of that type, having that extra room in the back for, say, a fire personnel that are assisting or just moving around the patient to get the job done, it's really more effective with that. Now that we've had the type 2, the new one you bought last time, and in comparison, it really is a better operational vehicle for us to have the type 3 if we can afford it. One of the other advantages is, for example, the unit, the modular, the type 3 we already have, when the chassis reaches its limit of usefulness, whether that be warranty or just, starts to nickel and dime us with repairs, we can rebox. There's a process that we can take that modular box and put it on a brand new chassis at a much less cost than the entire whole new unit. So down the road, over time, the cost of maintaining our fleet is less with a type 3 because you can rebox at a less cost than just buying another type 2 and another type 2.
I don't mean to, drag this discussion out because it sounds like the decision is moving back to the Property and Facilities Committee to make a final decision to come back at some point to the board with a firm proposal that the board can vote on. But I just wanted to let you know what my concerns were as the Property and Facilities Committee goes through those deliberations. And isn't Unit 17 a box type 2 ambulance?
No, it's a van. It's a type 2.
One type 3, right?
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Those are my issues and concerns. And, as far as I'm concerned, it goes back to Property and Facilities for further discussion and a recommendation.
Well, I just have to appreciate very much your input and the financial input, and we'll we'll be in touch with you as the committee talks about pros and cons of different things. So I think this is exactly what we wanted, was to begin a discussion of looking at the fleet as a whole and what the right thing to do is at this point. So we'll get back to you hopefully by next meeting as well.
Okay.
And could I just say one thing from a grant writing perspective, that it may be wiser to go after this larger, or the type three, is it, the larger box unit, to the granting process, because you can show a clearer need versus a clearer need that way than just replacement of an existing type two.
That's, yeah, and I considered that because we're only looking at August, September when the AFG opens up again, and you can ask for vehicles, and I think we can buy the full price of a type three through that grant process. Like Barbara, and you had long discussions at the committee meetings last Monday and so forth. You know, this is obviously, there's a lot of pieces to this puzzle, and they've been great in asking all kinds of good questions. And we've been, Tim's been great with getting all the right answers. So, you know, an awful lot of thought is going into this, and for good reason, obviously. But I think that we want to make sure we make the right, like Barbara said a few minutes ago, we know we're going to need a new ambulance, say, in the next 12 to 15 months. That's a given. That just is part of the business. You can't keep them forever, especially in a coastal salt fog community. There, as you've seen in Tim's pictures, the two old ones are rusting. But we want to make it a very wise decision, and also a nod to the finance committee. We don't want to torpedo our budget in the same process. So if we can be like you said, we'll get more detailed information, and perhaps the finance or the properties and facilities committee would recommend that we refer this to the grant process and see. And then if we don't get the grant, well, then we'll come back to the drawing board and see if we can make it, you know, fit our budget. But that might
be the other thing I wanted to say about the grant process is that in our discussions we talked about perhaps asking Operation Project Heartbeat for money, and I realized that we probably need a coordinated effort between the various committees in planning what we approach Project Heartbeat for and why them, as opposed to a different kind of grant request or going directly to our own funds. So I'm not sure how that kind of a co-committee effort or group effort could occur, but I realize that almost every committee needs funds, and we need some way, I think, to know who should be the committee or what should be the project that we use to approach that nonprofit and maybe other nonprofits in town.
Yeah, and just for the benefit of the other board members, we had talked about approaching the Project Heartbeat for the Cal Fire ambulance purchase price, because it could feasibly be within their ability to do so. But it's not the purchase price that scares me. It's that unknown repair cost, the lack of warranty. No matter how, if Cal Fire, for example, were to donate the ambulance to us, I'd still be concerned about the impact on our budget, because we just don't know about future repairs with no warranty. It really, really worries me.
But what I'm trying to say, Mike, is that I agree with you. But what I'm trying to say is that there are a variety of resources, even in town. Our very first ambulance was donated by the Lions Club back in the late 50s. So we have a history of asking for kind of combinations of funds in order to make something important happen. And so maybe we can all think about how we figure out which projects that involve significant funds we should use, which projects do we ask which people or groups for, and we need to kind of do it coordinatedly, because one might be more appealing to one group than another. And I'm not sure what our forum could be, but I do think that would be a useful exercise to kind of think about in addition to paying for it ourselves, what, who else could help us, and on which projects?
I agree.
Okay, so this item is going to go back to property and facilities for further action. Is that correct?
That would be great. Yes, we just wanted to give you an update, and so you understood, and we wanted the benefit of your advice.
Thank you, Barbara, and everyone. Let's move on to item 5, which is the fiscal 2020-21 operating budget. In your packet, you have been supplied a copy of it. It's on page 66. And we discussed this at length, I believe, at the strategic planning session. And without spending time going over it, but I'd be happy to do so, I think it may be easier to say, does anyone have any questions now that they've had time to think about it and look at it and et cetera, et cetera?
Bill, I momentarily have reception. Can you hear me?
Yes, we do. We're now losing you. Cecilia? Cecilia?
My question really.
You're breaking up on us.
Others can.
Cecilia?
I was just asking that you go ahead and I'll.
It sounded like she was suggesting we go ahead and accept this with a motion. And if she had any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them later for her. Is there a motion to accept?
I move we accept the proposed operating budget for fiscal year 2020 to 2021 as presented.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made and duly seconded. Simone, if you would do a roll call.
Okay. Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray?
Yes.
Lori Melior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo? Cecilia? Montalvo? Well, I guess she can't hear us.
Okay, well, it's we have a quorum with 3 votes, so it's passed.
Okay.
Item 7, do we need to do item 7 at this point?
Yes, it is. Let me scroll down to that. It is a requirement. We have to. Well, we don't have to. I shouldn't say that. The will of the board. Item 7 is another resolution. According to the elections code, in a nutshell, we have 2 vacant seats coming in on the November election, Cecilia's and Barbara's. We have to direct the county elections clerk recorder's office to put that on the ballot, to basically consolidate our needs for an election with theirs. That's done by resolution, and I have to have that to them prior to July 1st, or we won't make it on the ballot, and that means we would have to call a special election to elect those 2 seats. So I've drafted the appropriate language for that resolution that I will then send to the clerk recorder's office so that those 2 seats will be on the ballot. And along with that, then that we also, not today, but we would need to, if Cecilia and Barbara are running for those 2 seats, they would need to make a similar declaration, not with a resolution. It's just kind of part of the paperwork that would go in prior to July 1st.
Now, say what, it doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter if Cecilia or I, if we, either of us has declared that we're running. Pardon me?
Yeah, I was trying to say that that's a separate process.
I mean, we know we have to have the election because our seats are up, and so we know the election has to occur. So it doesn't have anything to do with whether we're running or not running. It has to do with the board's need to fill those seats, either with people who are returning or people who are not returning, who are new.
This resolution just puts us on their election.
Okay.
Right. I was responding to what you said.
And I understand that. Sorry, Barbara. I also understood that there's a cost that we contribute to this election. Is that right, Mike?
Yes, it's on the cover sheet. Approximately $15,000 is my understanding.
And my question my question relates to the budget. Was that money included in the budget?
Yeah.
Yes, we had money in the budget for the election.
Okay, good.
Did you have as much money in the budget as we were told it would be? Tommy Gong told me it was $13,500.
It seems to me, Barbara, we have about $10,000 in there, and depending on what happens with ambulance acquisition decisions, and we're going to hear in the next 30 to 60 days on grants. And I think we'll be able to find the difference in the budget.
Otherwise, we'll be selling cookies.
I like cookies.
With all of that said, do I hear a motion to accept this?
I move that we accept the resolution as presented.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made and duly seconded. I'm sorry? Cecilia?
Here's
Cecilia. Oh, thanks, Cecilia. Okay, Simone, if you would have a roll call.
Okay. Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Grotzinger?
Yes.
Lori Millior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo?
It looks like we have three ayes, and so the motion passes.
Okay.
All right, and I'll have this ready for signatures along with the other resolution very quickly for Iggy and Barbara.
Okay. Let me know when it's ready, and I will come by for my part.
Showing that we have gone through the agenda and covered everything, unless there's an exception, I'm going to declare the meeting over. And when do you want to start the closed session, Mike?
Bill, there's one other thing. Bill?
Yes?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I'm not sure. Okay. Just I think you might be aware of it, just so the rest of the board members know. The F closed session, we're going to defer that because Bill Avery, as it turned out, is not available this afternoon for that closed session. So we'll set up a separate meeting later this month to make that happen when you guys are available.
Okay. Well, then I think, go ahead, Barbara.
Oh, no, it's me. So there's no closed session today?
No closed session today. He ended up being on an
airplane. All right. Oh, okay. All right.
So with that, I think we're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Safe
trip, Cecilia.
Thank you.
Of course, that's frustrating. Well, and